Hi folks, Phil here. This is a special bonus episode of Science Fiction 101, and it's all about a film festival. If you've ever wondered how film festivals are put together, you're about to find out. We'll be back with our next normal episode in a couple of weeks, but we hope you enjoy this bonus.
Hi, I'm Colin.
And I'm Phil.
We're the hosts of Science Fiction 101.
It's a show which gets to the heart of science fiction. Books, films, TV. We've covered Star Trek.
Doctor Who.
Star Wars.
We love to explore the past, present, and future of science fiction.
And we'd love for you to join us on Science Fiction 101.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Colin.
Hey, Phil, do you remember in our last episode where I mentioned the Science Fiction Film Festival at OMSI, the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry?
Yes, I do.
I mentioned that I was setting up a meeting with someone from the festival to come talk to us because I have all these questions.
Yeah.
I've been going there with my son, Tim, now for about 4 weeks. We've seen 10 movies so far. It's been
wow.
A lot of fun. I've seen a ton of science fiction. Most of it I've seen, most of it he hasn't seen. So it's kind of cool having those shared experiences. But I arranged for Russ Rep, who is the vice president of marketing and retail, to come onto our podcast and answer some of these questions that I have. Hi, Russ.
Thank you. And thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be invited to a conversation with two experts of the genre.
I don't know if we're experts or not, but we do still like talking about it a lot. So, you know, I've known about OMSI for 50 years or so, but most of our listeners won't. Can you tell us a little bit about OMSI?
Sure. So the OMSI stands for the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, and we're located here in Portland, Oregon, right along the Willamette River. I think most people envision us as a science center. We have, in addition to our museum exhibit halls, we have labs that you can do hands-on experimentation in. We have a planetarium. We have a former U.S. Navy submarine that's docked here on the river that you can do tours of. And then we have a giant screen theater, but we also do as an organization much more than what a lot of visitors associate with the museum. For example, we do a lot of traveling outreach educational programs to schools and community organizations throughout the Pacific Northwest. And we have one of the largest traveling outreach programs in the country. And then we also create our own science exhibits, and those tour other science museums and organizations throughout the country and the world, actually. We also host some very robust summer programs for youth, both here at the museum, and then we have, as part of OMSI, two residential camps that are not in Portland, one along the Oregon coast, Camp Gray in Newport, Oregon, and then one in Central Oregon, which is Camp Hancock. And those provide educational programming for youth during the summer, and then also during the school year as part of outdoor school programs.
Wow.
What a busy place. What about the film festival? How does that fit in? And how long has it been running?
The film festival really came into being back in 2015. And that was partly a result of our converting our theater back in late 2013 from a dome theater, which some museums throughout the world have. If you've been, there's the IMAX Dome Theaters in a couple of locations internationally. But we converted from that dome theater to a giant flat screen theater. And the thinking there was to be able to provide more diverse programming. So while we loved the dome theater, it sort of limited the type of content that we could play to content ideally that was shot for a dome screen. Shortly after making that transition, we started to look at alternative programming that we could offer in the theater outside of what we had traditionally offered, which was 40-minute long educational documentaries, which we still offered to audiences during the day. But in the evenings, we saw an opportunity to really expand that to non-educational programming, maybe Hollywood films or to other documentaries that might not fall into that 40-minute time frame. And one of our aspects of OMSI is we've always been a community destination. So part of the thinking on the film festival was an opportunity to draw audiences to OMSI that might not normally come during the day for an exhibit, but would be interested in seeing a film. And then hopefully, based on that experience, would come back to the museum at a future date. Thinking about science fiction, of course, was we were trying to think of programming that would correspond to sort of our science mission. And science fiction was obviously one of the closer genres. I always think back to some of the quotes I've seen over the years from Neil deGrasse Tyson, who talks about how but the best science fiction films stimulate curiosity and interest in a topic, or even going to folks more involved in the theater scene like Steven Spielberg, who's, you know, really has done a lot of science fiction films over the year and looks at science fiction movies as warnings or opportunities to tell us about things that are ultimately going to come true. So we sort of position science fiction, certainly it's entertaining, but it also contains elements, I think, for us to consider the best science fiction films, and, you know, have a lot of food for thought about where we're headed as a society, you know, and thinking through films that we're offering during the festival. We're looking at a couple of different elements, obviously pure entertainment, but we're also thinking about what type of messaging those films provide.
Who's attending the festival? Is it science fiction fans, non-fans, kids, families, film buffs, podcasters?
Really everyone. We're fortunate here to have such a diverse set of audiences, folks that are just attending the festival, that have bought passes for the festival and show up, you know, almost every day to see a screening. Some of them, you know, on the days where we're doing four or five screenings in a day, they'll bring a small backpack and basically camp out in the theater to watch a full slate of shows all day. And then we also have our OMSI members that are interested in different types of programming that we might traditionally offer. And then certainly a large part of the audience is folks, again, that may not come to OMSI on, say, a weekly basis like our members do or monthly basis, but they see a film that they're really interested in. And this is a great opportunity to see it on the big screen because many of our offerings haven't played in a traditional cinema in, you know, 40, 50 years. So this is a great opportunity for them to see it sort of as the director or the producers intended it in a cinema on a giant screen as opposed to, you know, at home in a television.
So how do you actually choose the films? And are there any limitations on what you have access to?
There are limitations, and some of those limitations are based on the particular studios. So each studio takes a different approach, or there's, you know, a couple camps of studios as to how they allow theaters maybe to display their films and what they would consider their library as opposed to their new release films. There's also the fact that we've decided to only display films that we can project in what's called a digital cinema package. So, you know, the industry as a whole, you know, roughly 20 years ago or so, switched from film to digital. And in doing so, they adopted a particular format. That's what a DCP is, or digital cinema package. We have the opportunity as a theater to, for example, we could stream something or we could play it off of a Blu-ray, but for quality reasons, we've elected not to do that. So there is a limitation in that a lot of classic films have not been transferred to this DCP software format. I'll give you a good example, Minority Report, which is not that old of a film, and one that I was hoping to bring in for the festival is not available in the DCP format.
Oh.
Unfortunately, that was one film that we had to bypass because of that.
That's amazing. I thought you were going to say something like Forbidden Planet or, you know, something from the 50s, not something so recent.
They're doing Forbidden Planet this year.
Yeah, exactly. We do have Forbidden Planet. And that's, you know, that's the interesting thing. Studios have taken different approaches to what films that they'll have available for us to screen. And a few studios have been more aggressive in transferring some of those older films to the DCP format, but it's very hit or miss. Sony has quite a few older films that we've been able to gain access to, Warner Brothers, Paramount, but it's not consistent. We do have Forbidden Planet this year. We have the original War of the Worlds from 1953. We do purposely bring in some of these older films because they're sort of at the beginning of the sci-fi genre. And we think it's important to have those. And many of them are really classics of the genre. Thematically, they really approach some of the same topics that some of the more recent films present. So we do try to get a diversity of different films into the festival across a broad span, you know, ranging from the 50s to the 60s, 70s, and moving forward to the present day.
I noticed that this year there are films from Russia, France, and Japan. Has there always been international films shown in the festival, or is that a new thing?
It's relatively new. So in 2019, which was the last year that we offered the festival, we did a Japanese animated film. We did a Swedish-Danish production, Anara. And then we did the classic French-Czech animated film, Fantastic Planet. And so that was the first year that we really did look to bring in a broader international flavor, if you will. And of course, this year we have Stalker, Alphaville from Goddard, and then two Japanese anime films that we were fortunate to bring in. And of course, you know, I know you mentioned those countries. Of course, we've got some selections of films that have been filmed in Australia and the UK as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've really tried to make a conscious effort to bring that diversity into the festival.
How do those films go down? I mean, are they popular with audiences?
They are. I will say it's not necessarily uniformly the case. So Japanese animation in particular has traditionally been a very well-received genre here in the Portland area. And we also do a Studio Ghibli Film Festival annually that is probably our most popular festival. Then Stalker this year, to be honest with you, has been one of our best performing films.
Wow.
I think partly just because of the fact not only is it an outstanding film, but it's just not a film that you see playing in the cinema very often. You'd certainly want and hope that cinemaphiles and other fans would really flock to see these films again, just because they're not available on a frequent basis. Even though Portland's a great cinema town and we have some fantastic independent cinema here, you know, there's a lot of programming and just limited opportunities to see some of these.
My son Tim and I, as I mentioned, have been seeing the movies, and we've given names to some of the days. For example, the day when the 1953 War of the Worlds was paired with Edge of Tomorrow, we called that Invasion Thursday. How do you decide, out of the 40 movies you're going to show in this festival, which ones to pair together?
I wish I could tell you that every day, every schedule was super intentionally designed. And I will say there is an intention, maybe not in the thematic sense that you're describing there for the Invasion Thursday. You know, we're looking at, when the schedule is being created, a number of different factors. Sometimes it's the availability of the film as dictated by the studio. So I'll give you an example. Mad Max 2, because of the upcoming Furiosa film, will not be available at the theaters after a certain date. Uh-huh. So we had to slot that in the time frame that we did, or we couldn't go any later in the festival with it. We also try to think about the films and the audiences that would appeal to, and not, let's say, book, to your question earlier about some of the international films, necessarily book those on the same days, but to spread those out a little bit. Same with our classic films. We haven't necessarily scheduled War of the Worlds and Forbidden Planet on the same day because we wanted to provide a little diversity of programming throughout the festival. That said, we do sometimes look at sort of the fun type of pairings that you're talking about. So tonight is a good example. We're doing sequels. We've got Mad Max 2 and Terminator 2 playing this evening. And I will say the one day of all that during the festival that I did really think very intentionally about the programming was, the festival is occurring during Mother's Day. So I was thinking about science fiction films that focus on family and love. And so that day in particular, we're playing Starman, the classic John Carpenter film with Jeff Bridges. We've got Her, directed by Spike Jonze. And then one of our Japanese animated films, Mirari, that is also playing. And all those have sort of a focus on love or family in those titles. And I just thought that would be appropriate for a Mother's Day, maybe as opposed to Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
So that was one day in particular that we were very intentional about. And then, like I said, in some other cases, that was certainly a consideration.
And are you allowed to have personal favorites in all of this? Or do you have to keep a detached, sort of balanced view of the whole thing?
Well, you know, the good news is, being a fan of science fiction, all of these are in some form or fashion, you know, favorites. You know, there's certainly science fiction films that for different reasons we may have elected not to bring in, just because, you know, just like any genre, there's a lot of science fiction films that are frankly not really good. And so what we tried to do is pick the highest quality films, the ones that have stood the test of time. And there were certainly many films that we were not able to select that, to be honest with you, we would have loved to have in the festival, The Matrix being one of them.
Oh, yeah.
But due to studio restrictions, they're just simply not available to us. Aliens would be another one that we've shown in the past that we would have loved to bring back. So there are a number of films that, because of studio restrictions, just not currently available to us. As far as favorites, you know, again, each of these, I think, is a great film. You know, some of them do have a little bit more personal meaning for me, potentially, because I, unfortunately, good or bad, I'm old enough to remember going to the theater, you know, first run to see a film like E.T. or Close Encounters. Or I can think of Gravity, which was one of the films that, once we had renovated the theater, was a film that we opened here, second run, and was just outstanding to see in our theater because of the Dolby audio system, because of the fact that we, at that time, did it in 3D. We do have that capability. So there are films definitely in this that have memories for me personally, but the real focus was on the audience and what they would think would be outstanding films to see.
And do you take requests from the audiences?
We certainly would. And in the past, we have polled audiences through social media to understand what some of their favorites might be. And as you can imagine, they corresponded quite a bit to some of the films that we have in the festival this year, whether it's 2001 or, you know, Close Encounters, Back to the Future. So, you know, many of the films we have are informed by, you know, what we've received feedback from audiences in the past. And honestly, you know, we look to our staff as well. We're fortunate to have some great theater staff here at the museum, our projectionists and other staff throughout the organization that provide feedback to us on films that they would love to see. And so we certainly take that into consideration as well.
There was I'm on two podcasts, this one with Phil and another one called Take Me to Your Reader, which is about exclusively adapted science fiction. And one of my co-hosts there, Seth, wanted me to relay a request, and I'm not sure if it's available in the package or not, but he would love to see Sunshine on the big screen again.
Yeah, Sunshine was one we have shown in a previous iteration of the festival. And unfortunately, I think that's with a studio currently that we have challenges getting films with. So I would have to check that, but definitely if Sunshine's a great film, and if we can bring it in next year or in a future year, we will definitely look to do that.
Cool.
So keep the request coming.
So over the years, is there a record for which film has set the highest attendance ever?
You know, it does tend to vary a little bit year to year. I can remember a few years ago, Serenity, I think, you know, there was a lot of folks that were rediscovering Firefly from television, you know, maybe on a streaming, and Serenity was really popular. Mm-hmm. I'd have to say, of all the films that we've shown, really Blade Runner is probably the most consistent performer as far as ticket sales go. I did receive an email for this year for one of our pass holders, I believe, or ticket holders, that asked, because we had mistakenly identified the film as the director's cut instead of the final cut.
Oh.
There's, you know, several different versions of Blade Runner that have played over the years. And it was, you know, I had to go back and double check with Warner Brothers, who released the film, to understand which version we were getting. But fortunately, it is the final cut, which I think most people regard as the best. But Blade Runner, you know, there's a high affinity for that film. I think Blade Runner 2049 is a terrific film as well on its own. And Blade Runner 2049, we did play back in 2019. But both of those do well. This year, we were fortunate. We sold out our opening night screenings of The Fifth Element, which has also been a favorite over the years. But as I mentioned earlier, Stalker, we almost sold out those performances. Other ones that have been favorites, 2001. Interstellar is very popular, and John Carpenter's The Thing. I don't know that a lot of folks see that as a science fiction blockbuster like maybe an Interstellar, but it definitely has a following. And again, we sold out one of our screenings this year.
Are there any films that you've been dying to show but you just can't get?
I think I mentioned earlier Minority Report was a film I'd love to show. Akira, Japanese animated film, was one that we wanted to show. Certainly parts of the Star Wars series would have been terrific. Personally, again, these are just two films that I can recall from actually seeing on television when I was younger, but are not available in the digital format that we need. One is actually a UK production from Hammer Films called Quartermass in the Pit, and it's sort of more of a horror science fiction film. I'd love to be able to play that. And the other one is a Colossus to Forbin project, which was interestingly, about the computer takeover of the world, sort of along the themes of Terminator with Skynet, right? And starred Eric Braeden, who would later become famous for his recurring role in Young and the Restless. But it's a great film, really well reviewed. Again, would probably seem very dated for most audiences, but if they were available in the digital format that we use, we'd certainly be interested in bringing in. And maybe we would create a day for obscure science fiction films.
I'm sure you'd get Colin coming along to that, definitely.
Oh, yeah. I was tickled to see The Last Starfighter come on to this selection, because that's one of my favorites.
Oh.
I still remember being a kid, teenage kid, seeing that in the theaters in the 80s. And when it came on, when it was announced, I'm like, oh, I have to go see that. And my son Tin came, and my friend Seth came. It was a great night.
And how did they like it?
So Seth and I had shown it to our kids that are kind of all about the same age. They're currently all in their 20s. We had done this a couple of years ago, and none of the kids really liked it. They didn't get the humor, because I think it was more of an 80s style humor.
Right.
And the graphics are pretty dated by today's standards. And when Tim watched it a second time, he's like, you know, I think it's growing on me. It's still really, really corny and kind of snarky in some places, but he likes it better. So
yeah, there's definitely, I think it's interesting because there's definitely a nostalgia factor with a lot of these films, certainly from those eras. And we had one of our audience members reach out, you know, we're showing Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan coming up. And one of our audience members, who's a tremendous fan of the film, has approached me about doing sort of a fun, informal contest for folks that are in the audience for the film, where he wants to recreate a scene from the film with William Shatner doing some histrionics over Khan. And so he wants audience members to recreate that moment. And whoever does the best job, I think we're giving passes to a local bowling alley, Grand Central Bowl. But that's the type of, you know, to be honest with you, that's a good indication of the type of enthusiasm these type of festivals create in our audiences. And to be honest with you, what we're looking for when we are doing programming like this, we're looking for that synergy between what we're presenting and the audience. And so that it's as much an interactive experience as it is just a cinema viewing experience. So really that's what we're all about when we pick films. You know, again, the entertainment factor is certainly a consideration.
And how much longer has the festival got to run?
It's scheduled to run through May 23rd. We're hoping to end it with a screening of the Furiosa on the 24th. And we're just waiting for details on that film's availability. And that would be the end of the festival for this year. But of course, we'll continue to screen science fiction films throughout the remainder of the year, and then look to bring the festival back probably around the same time frame next year, in the spring of next year. You know, the theater is a high demand venue for us. Between presentations and other programming, we're looking, as we did pre-pandemic, to make this an annual occasion with other films. You know, I don't know if we'll do it for 8 weeks again. The first iteration we did back in 2015 was 1 week, 15 films. So eight weeks may be a little bit longer than ideal, but we'll see.
This is a bit of a silly question, but did you start out with a time slot, you know, a beginning and an end for the festival, and then work out how many films to fit in? Or did you sort of amass as many films as you could and then see where that would fit on the calendar? Do you see what I mean?
It was sort of a balance of both. So we knew films that we wanted to play. The Empirical Theater is not a traditional commercial theater. We do so much community programming in that space, whether it's lectures or other presentations. So we have to be conscientious of how those other uses of the theater interplay with whatever festivals we're organizing. And then we look at the release schedule to understand, are there films releasing from the studios that we feel would do well in the theater? So looking at this time frame, it was a combination of, we have a lot of great films that we want to see or display, that we certainly want to make sure that each of those films is available for at least two screenings to allow folks an opportunity to see them. And then we just came off Dune 2. We saw that Furiosa was coming out in late May. So those two sort of did give us bookends, if you will, for when we could potentially run the festival. And so there, then we did look at how many films would be ideal to fit into the time available. I think we struck a good balance.
As someone who's been attending, I would definitely say so. Yeah. Now, people are going to listen to this and be really inspired. If they have a museum or a venue next to them that wants to start a film festival, how should they approach that venue to get that started?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think museums are interesting because we are very fortunate. I've worked with two museum presidents that have been very supportive of the programming that we've done in the theater. Each institution has its own demands on its spaces and restrictions as far as content or goals as far as what types of audiences that they're looking to draw and at what times. So my first suggestion would be to find out who is the theater director, to approach them, to understand, you know, if that would even be conceivable. The theater director would be the first step. And then maybe working with that theater director to underline the community support for a festival like that. If it weren't a museum, but a local art house theater, you know, I would make the same suggestion, talking to the owner, talking to whoever does the booking or the scheduling of the programming, to see what opportunities there might be to do a festival like this. Certainly is a lot of work, and it may or may not be financially feasible. We've been fortunate, you know, OMSI has a very dedicated member base that supports the museum. There's some 20,000 households in Portland that are members of OMSI. I think we have, we're fortunate to be in a community that is very supportive. I can't speak to other theaters or to other museums, but hopefully for individuals interested elsewhere, they would be able to find that same level of interest and support.
Cool.
Right.
Phil, do you have any more questions?
No, I'm just very jealous because I'd love to come and see all these films on the big screen. I mean, I've seen, Colin shared a list with me, a list of the films from the festival. To be honest, most of them I've seen anyway, but I've only ever seen them on a small screen, you know, so I'd love to see them as they're meant to be seen.
Well, please let me know if you're in the area at any time. Be happy to get you some passes. If you're ever in Portland, be happy to chat with you further about what we're doing here at the museum and certainly about the Science Fiction Film Festival.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today. I have really personally enjoyed going to the festival for the past month, and I'm looking forward to what we're going to see in the next month.
Thank you.
Your staff is top-notch. They're good people, very professional. They do their jobs well. The first movie we went to, I think someone was a little startled because everyone applauded after they did the announcements right before the movie. And they were like, that's cool. They bowed and walked out.
We appreciate the audience support. Really, that's what makes these type of programs possible. And it's been a tremendous. We sold out of our film festival passes this year, which was not something that we anticipated. You know, it was the highest number that we've ever sold.
Wow.
To have that level of love and support from the community has just been tremendous.
And we'll send you a link to this episode when it's posted so that, you know, you can listen to it. And
great. Well, thank you. I look forward to it.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. That was really good.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks, Colin.
You betcha. Bye-bye. It's cool getting some behind the scenes, you know, aspects of what's going on, you know, especially, you know, like how they're limited for what they can pick. And
yeah, Russ is doing here, creating a huge block of time in the calendar. I'm amazed how long this is for a festival. Usually film festivals are like a week. Mm-hmm. So he's carved out a huge amount of time and then he's filling it with as much stuff as he can get. And I think that's terrific. That's why the list of films that you shared with me is so impressive, because he's got everything on there except those few things that he cannot get.
Yeah. Yeah, there's 40 different films across 7 decades.
Wow, really good. How many of these 40 have you seen? Or have you seen at the festival, I should have said?
Oh, 10.
Okay.
Yeah, we got kind of a late start. The first movie was Gravity on April 5th.
Yeah.
And some of them we just couldn't see due to schedule. Some of them we weren't overly interested in, although now I'm kind of wishing just for the experience that we had seen a couple more than we had. Like, I totally missed the 1984 Dune.
All right.
Alphaville, the French movie.
Yeah.
Although having watching Stalker is a lot like 2001 in pacing, but it's even more artistic. And so it's okay. It's a movie that leaves you asking lots of questions about what's going on. Like Seth and I out on the disc golf course, we're talking about, did you notice that that lady looked like she had like drug paraphernalia on her nightstand? And I'm like, yeah. And I said, did you notice that that syringe shows up under the water in the zone an hour and a half later?
Uh-huh.
And so then we were talking about what it meant and what it represented. And I think that's the goal of an art film, is not to be so definitive, but to spur conversation and ideas.
Yeah, yeah. I'm amazed that Stalker is one of Russ's best sellers.
Yeah, both showings sold out. And so... So we've seen 10 of these movies, and the attendance varies from 30 to 40 to almost full. Like the Saturday afternoon showing of The Iron Giant was full of kids and families and parents. And you could hear, you know, people talking to their kids. Yeah, I saw this when I was a kid. And so yeah, then Stalker happens and it's full, really full. And I'm like, wow. And then we sat through the movie and we're like, they came to see this.
And they didn't start drifting out as the film went on.
No, I don't think it's hard to tell, because the people, there's an exit at the back of the theater and it's the one they prefer us to use. So the front door gets locked and the restrooms are behind us.
So what are you thinking? Should we put this out as a special episode? Just this, not have any quizzes, or just literally this that we've recorded, but with the bad bits cut out?
Yeah. That would save the overhead of, you know, doing the social media feedback and the past, present, future and the quiz.
Yeah.
And it would get it out sooner. I don't know how many of our listeners are in the Northwest would go to such a thing, but it seems to be more timely to do it now versus June, so to say.
Yes. Yes, it does. So, yeah. We're Phil Nichols and Colin Kusky. And our theme tune is from Purple Planet at purpleplanet.com. Check out the show notes at 101sf.blogspot.com. And please give us a glowing 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. And we'll see you next time.